Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we're talking about why your winery is just losing money, hand over fist, and the trials and tribulations that cause that to happen. This is going to be one of those episodes that we haven't done in a while where it's very like industry kind of business focused. For those of you that are, you know, consumers of wine, kind of outside the wine industry, this is probably just like good background knowledge to have about how and why everything from wineries, retail shops, like flash sale, like websites, all this kind of stuff, how this interacts, why you see certain things from certain sales avenues, let's say, between like a wine club versus like a flash sale site, all that good stuff, how it affects us wineries and why wineries do a terrible job of managing these things very typically, and this the kind of stuff that we try and avoid with our own business. Before we get into that, as always, a couple quick, very quick announcements. You know the drill. Follow us on our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's on YouTube, The Book of Face, Instagram, the social network formerly known as Twitter. On YouTube in particular, you can find tasting notes on our wines. You can find the video version of the podcast here and watch me dance around my office. Be sure to head to our website, mtgawines.com, where you can find out a little bit more about us, more information on our wine club mailing list. You can also scroll down on the homepage there to that little email form and submit questions for our monthly Q&A episode that comes out at the end of every month. We just released the one from April, just not a week ago or so, whatever it was. What day is it? I guess we're 2 weeks into the month of May already. Go figure. Anyway, go do that. Be sure to like, follow, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcasts. And we'll keep kicking them out to the best of my ability when we're here at the home office and hopefully when we're on the road, when I don't have technical difficulties like I had last week or the week before, whatever it was. All right, let's get into this, shall we? Now, this all came about because of a great tasting we caught up with a client of ours just this last week, which is also why this podcast is coming out a little late this week as well, is shout out to our friends, the Smiths, who are out from Ohio, and their friends that they brought out with us this last week as well. This is a shout out to you guys and kind of posing this question. We got into this, not maybe a little bit of a debate or a discourse, maybe not that intense. And hopefully I wasn't too overbearing about it, but it was, you know, really kind of started out with like shipping costs and, why a price from one winery is way more or less than another winery, or why when I buy through a flash sale site, I can get free shipping or, you know, dollar shipping or whatever when I buy a case, but I can't do that through other places. We also talked tasting fees, and this really kind of comes on the heels of, the Lawrence wine group and the conversation we had on the show a couple weeks ago after those articles kind of came out about their $125 plus dollar experiences that aren't covering their costs, and dealing with costs of samples and labor and all this other stuff. So we're gonna get into like the nitty gritty here with some dollars and cents for a little bit, but let's start kind of at the top with the shipping question that I mentioned. And Bob posed a great kind of question about this, because I think we were talking about a flash sale site like Wine Access, who he's bought some of our family wines from, Anderson Con Valley in particular, I believe. You know, they were offering it at a certain price that happened to be a lot cheaper than the winery price. And on top of that, if you buy like a certain amount, you get a deal on shipping as well. Now, as it pertains to like the pricing of wine, let's start with that, because I know some of you will see, even like our wines when they make it out and about to certain locales, even though that happens very rarely, you might see it at a different price than what the winery sells it for. Why is that? Well, if you've been listening to the show for a little bit, you know that if we're going to sell through kind of this distribution channel and we're going to go through a distributor to a retail shop, restaurant, country club, whatever the case is, we have to at least discount our wines to about half off, and half off the retail price. So if you're selling a $50 bottle of wine, you have to sell it to that distributor for $25, if not less, so that they can, mark it up, get their cut, and then sell it to the next person, which is the retail shop, restaurant, whatever, what have you. The second we sell that wine to them, we can no longer dictate pricing. In fact, it's illegal for us as the winery to tell them, hey, you are in essence mandated to charge that $50 price. We cannot control that. Now, there's a nice understanding between, wineries and distributors and things of like, let's not try to mess around too much with the pricing. Let's keep it within a good ballpark. That way a certain, you know, sales outlet's not undercutting, you know, the winery, or not like overcharging by a whole bunch either. So very typically, it's not like it's this crazy adversarial thing where we are having to like hunt people down who are like actively overly discounting stuff. That's the kind of thing that wineries have to kind of like sign up for. So just keep that in mind, like as a part of this, that if you're seeing a wine like out in the wild, when it comes to like a wine shop, restaurant, country club, the wineries technically have no say in what that place of business is charging for their wine. All of that is done through the distributor and then eventually through that account specifically. So that's just a little thing to keep in mind. Now, there is kind of an exception to that with like the flash sale websites and the conversation in the cave this last week. You know, we were talking about Wine Access in particular, which some of you may be familiar with. You can also have like first bottle, last bottle. Like there's a bunch of different places where you can find like these flash site deals where it's like, hey, you know, here's this wine that was $50. You know, we were going to discount it to $40, but guess what? We're going to give it to you at $25. And they'll give you like this hefty discount. Now, in that kind of situation, you know, the winery's not selling it to them for $25 because they wouldn't be making any money. The winery is discounting it even further because they're long on inventory. They're trying to get rid of wine typically, and they could be taking a loss on it, but they just need to move inventory. You know, cash is king. They need some money in the bank, and they're going to say, you know what, we'll take the hit. We're going to deep discount this through this sales channel and just let her rip. So that's where you'll see, you know, wineries kind of bite the bullet and will kind of like fall back and like, oh, well, you know, we can't control the price, but you know it's going to be heavily discounted because you just need to move through inventory. So it's a sales tactic. It can get your wine out there, and some of you as consumers can find, you know, really good deals. However, you know, if you're doing a deep enough discount, you know, there's pretty likely that the winery itself is losing money in that kind of situation. We'll kind of get more into that as things go on. Now, to kind of convolute things even a little bit more, we have like the shipping costs. So not only do we not really control, you know, the pricing of our wines necessarily when it gets out into the world, but shipping costs are kind of this fixed thing, you know, and Bob brought up a great point that's like, hey, through someone like, you know, a Wine Access, let's say, not only am I getting that great discount on the wine because I'm buying a six pack or a case, but if I buy a certain volume, they're also going to help me out on the shipping costs. You know, they're going to sell it, you know, they're going to give it me with that plus shipping on like, you know, at a fraction of the cost or what it normally be. Or maybe this wine club, you know, every time I buy a case of this wine club, they give me like $10 shipping or dollar shipping or whatever the case is. And this is how that works, is that typically that business that is doing that discounting is just taking a hit on the shipping. They're eating the cost of it because, you know, at least to my knowledge, and there might be someone out there that has some inside track somewhere that I'm not aware of, but very typically, kind of whether you're a small, medium-sized winery, doesn't really matter. Shipping a case of wine across the country is going to be somewhere in like the $90 ballpark. That's what we get charged by any of the common carriers in the wine industry typically. It might be a little bit more, it might be a little bit less, but you're not going to see, you know, a company be like, hey, we can ship it to you for $40 instead of $90. Like that's just not a thing. So typically, if you're seeing these kind of flash sale sites or wineries discounting shipping like below that like case price, they're taking a hit on the shipping, right? Even if we are to charge that much, typically, I mean, even when we do try and charge shipping for like us as a business, if we do that, we typically take a hit no matter what. We probably lose somewhere between like $15,000 and $20,000 a year due to shipping costs. Just as the business, like stuff that is just outside of like the norm of what we would, you know, get charged or charge you, the consumer, for like shipping our wine across the country. Even if you see a line item for shipping, typically the winery is still taking a hit in some way, shape, or form. It's very, very rare that we cover our costs or even get close to covering our costs when it comes to shipping wine anywhere. that's just the reality of the situation. We kind of do the best we can to mitigate it, almost like a tasting fee, as we get into that conversation here in a minute as well, where it's not necessarily a revenue generator. We're just trying to make enough money so that we don't take a huge hit when it comes to kind of our operating expenses, basically. That's kind of what, you know, wineries charge very typically for shipping, is just the bare minimum to make sure that they don't have this huge, you know, red line in their budget every year. And believe me, I've worked for some wineries that have that huge red line when it comes to shipping, and try as they may to rectify that, many of them failed miserably. And that's why they were under budget and underachieving regularly. It can be a huge, huge issue. So this is where, you know, it can be a little contentious for us as, you know, wineries, is there's a lot of factors here. You have some folks that are discounting wines heavily. Sometimes those wines are way more affordable than what you can buy them for through the winery. And on top of that, sometimes you see other wineries charging a fraction of the price for shipping, or you see these discount sites charging even less for shipping in some situations. So there's a lot to combat when you're just kind of a small business trying to keep your head above water and cover your cost, right? Now, this is kind of I'm going to attack this from like a couple different, you know, avenues here. Number one is that if you're buying, and this is going to sound a little, you know, bad, but it's, I don't mean it that way. But if you're not buying directly from the winery, you know, like we were saying, doesn't really have any control over the pricing, but the winery also doesn't necessarily have total control of the quality of the wine once it leaves our warehouse. Now, we have great, you know, wineries have great partnerships with, you know, trucking companies, their distributors, the wines and, you know, or the wine companies that they sell through, whether it's a restaurant or retail shop, and we're relying for them to store the wine appropriately. That way we make sure that when it arrives, you know, in your shopping cart, or you pick it up at your local like small mom and pop wine shop, that it's of a good quality. It may or may not be. Typically, you know, if it happens to be a faulty bottle in some way, shape, or form, you know, a wine shop or restaurant will replace it. You know, you're not going to have like this, oh, I guess we're out. You're not going to necessarily be out that bottle of wine. But, you know, you've had many, many hands touch it. There's more room for error. And shoot, you know, this was back in my, my more corporate days, you know, 15 or so years ago, where it was like some wine had gotten shipped down to Arizona. It turned out that it was sit on a loading dock for a decent part of the afternoon during a more than a little bit warm kind of end of spring into summer day. And a lot of the wine got cooked. Some of it was okay. But we had customers calling us like, hey, we bought this wine from this wine shop and it's not any good. And we're like, well, we shipped it down there. You know, it went through this normal distribution channel. I mean, have you talked to the wine shop? Will they replace it? And then, you know, we're fielding customer calls about it, and it becomes an issue. And then we got to get a hold of that account. We find out like, oh yeah, it didn't get inside into their, you know, facility for a couple of hours, and that caused this problem. And now we have a whole rat's nest of issues that we got to sort out with consumers and the distributor and the account and all this other stuff. It's rare that kind of thing happens, but it can happen. So buying direct from a winery can be beneficial in that at least you have like a main line into their customer service, hopefully. That way, if there's an issue, like a shipping problem, or, you know, a bottle broke in transit because, you know, the FedEx guy threw it at your door, you know, we can replace it. And we do that very, very often. You know, we have a line item in our budget for replacing wines. Again, it's not a lot of volume every year. It's a bottle here, bottle there. It happens very rarely. But when it does, we still need to account for it, right? So that customer service side of thing does help. Number two is, and this is kind of what I, you know, a bigger selling point is that, you know, if you're buying from small producers, if you're in their wine club on their mailing list, you're in essence guaranteed the opportunity to buy certain wines, right? Like there are going to be certain small productions or even some of their staples that might make their way out into the world every once in a while. It might be in your favorite wine shop for a little bit, and then the next year it's not there anymore. Maybe it's because we sold out of it. Maybe it's because that wine shop decided not to pick up more of that wine, but all of a sudden, you know, you don't have access to it anymore. So that's kind of the other argument for going and buying direct from a winery, even though it can be a little bit more expensive, is that if you're on that mailing list or in that wine club, you're kind of guaranteed to get access to those wines every time they're released. And because, you know, it's not necessarily going to be a mainstay at that local shop or in that local restaurant. I mean, we've had plenty of accounts that we've had good relationships with that have sold a boatload of our wine. And for one reason or another, they just stop. And we are sitting here like, well, no, like we had a good thing going, like keep your customers happy with our wine. And they just said, no, we're going to try and we're going to do something else. Like maybe we'll pick up a couple cases later just for those that want it. But, you know, we're going to start working with some other wineries. That happens all the time. So it can be a little bit of that rat race too, where you're just kind of chasing your tail to make sure kind of your wine stays available in certain markets and in certain accounts. And even to the best of your ability, sometimes it doesn't happen. That's no shot at any, you know, account in particular, any distributor in particular. It's just kind of the way the business is. And we know that, everyone else knows that. So when we try and build a good relationship, we try and make sure it's like, hey, let's, you know, try and keep this good thing going. Let's foster this and make sure that, you know, it's a win-win kind of across the board. So those are kind of like the arguments for like buying direct sometimes, even though it can be more expensive, especially for larger brands that use some of these flash sale sites or are heavier in distribution where you might find them at your local store for a little bit cheaper than, you know, what you can buy it directly through like a winery website, right? But that deal might not be there forever and they might not have that wine again down the road. So typically the way I approach this in like any way is like, hey, if you find a better deal on our wine, given that we can't necessarily control that, have at it. Please go for it because at least you're still buying the wine. You're supporting that wine shop or that restaurant. You're supporting, you know, that distributor who works with us. And as a result, you're supporting us as a brand. So if you do find a wine that you love that is a great deal out there, jump on it. You know that, you know, the winery's probably taken a hit because, you know, they had to go through a distributor or one of these flash sale sites and had to discount it heavily to get it there. But, you know, in the end, you're still supporting that winery by buying that product and, you know, supporting them and sharing it with people and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, it's not necessarily like a bad thing to jump on a good. I mean, who doesn't love a good deal when you can find them? So it's not necessarily like a bad thing to do it, right? Just want you all to kind of like be aware of that. But, you know, it's important to know that, you know, from the winery side of it, you know, those costs are pretty fixed for us when it comes to getting that wine out there, you know, in terms of how we have to discount it to get it into distribution or on these flash sale sites. And then based on what they decide to do with it, whether it's a shipping deal or a discount on the wine, that's totally up to them. And this is kind of the other thing that I'll kind of throw out there, especially when it comes to like the deals that you see through like a flash sale site or certain wine clubs, things of that nature, is two things. Number one, this is either why that business is not doing so hot, or hopefully they're doing okay because they've taken this into account. And this is how any discount works, period. Typically, if the, you know, sales and marketing folks have done their job, and when they're contributing to the budget, they're looking at a couple of things. One is their, you know, average like retail value or margin, you know, that they're getting from their wines. Number two, if they plan on discounting or offering shipping specials, they account for that discount rate and what their shipping costs are. This is where I've seen businesses just getting so much hot water from a budget perspective because they say, hey, we have this $85 bottle of wine, and everything in the budget accounts for that wine being sold at $85, right? And let's say, you know, certain avenues, they say, you know what, we're having a, you know, sales are a little slow this month or this quarter, whatever. Let's go ahead and offer a 10% discount. And they go, okay, let's offer a 10% discount. So you take off the $8.50 off of that $85 bottle of wine, and all of a sudden you've cut into your margin just a little bit. And what typically happens in the goal in theory is that, hey, we're going to move enough of this wine that the volume kind of makes up for it, right? Let's plan on selling. If we can sell 10% more wine, we can kind of make up the difference for discounting this bottle, right? That's how it should work. What many people don't do is they don't take that discount rate into account. And from there, they're like, well, we're selling all this wine, but we're still like off budget and like off our goal. Like, how does this make sense? And it's like, well, you didn't take into account you know, this special that you were going to do. And yeah, you sold some wine, but you didn't sell enough volume to make up that difference for not making enough on the margin side of things. The same thing goes for a shipping deal. You know, if you're going to ship a case for 10 bucks because you want to give your wine club members a great deal, you're going to need to account for roughly, you know, $80 worth of cost when it comes to shipping that case, because you're going to have to pick up the tab for that. So if you ship, you know, 100 cases of wine, that can look really good on paper for sure, right? But now all of a sudden you need to account for, you know, an extra $8,000, right? Is that math right? 80 times 100? Yeah. I think that's right. $8,000. No. Am I dumb? Yeah. 80 times 100? Yeah. That's right. I'm an idiot. Man, apparently I need to finish my coffee because it's apparently math's hard today. So, right now you have another $8,000 of expenses that maybe you weren't planning on incurring, right? Now, did you sell enough wine to make up that difference, right? Or did you sell, in essence, the wine you were expecting, and now you're out this money that you were kind of expecting to have in terms of like charging for shipping or not offering that discount? See what I'm saying? So wineries and businesses out here can get in a lot of hot water very, very quickly, because you see a time like this where tourism is down and sales are down and things, and people are having trouble, you know, moving wine. It's like, we got to sell wine. We got to do it somehow. So people revert to a good discount or a great offer. And all of a sudden they kind of end up in the same hole that they were in. They just dug it a little bit deeper, because here's what happens is that, and I'm guilty of this, and I know some of you will probably agree with this as well, is that when you start seeing a good deal on wines from a winery, you start to expect the good deal. If someone offers you 10% off of a six pack, you're gonna be like, okay, let's jump on it. And then the next time you order a six pack, you're like, well, I still want that 10% off. Are you guys still doing it, right? That's still a thing, right? So all of a sudden, when you start discounting your wine, it's really tough to stop, because consumers, and this is no shade at y'all, will start to expect, hey, I need the 10% off if I'm going to buy at least six bottles. If I'm buying a case, I need at least free shipping on that case, because you offered me free shipping that one time. And now wineries are get caught up in that, and it becomes something that they need to budget for, rather than just kind of this one-time thing. So it can be a little dangerous from the business side of things as well if you're not built around that. You know, part of the conversation we had in the cave while we're out doing this tasting was, you know, we, from a budgetary standpoint, have priced our wines in a way that it covers what they need to in terms of, like, you know, the cost of making that wine, right? And then the time it takes to sell them, the cost of labor and marketing and everything, you know, overhead that goes into it. What's not priced into that wine is, say, a shipping deal, right? So, you know, to put it bluntly, if we were going to start saying, hey, shipping's included on our orders, I would need to raise the price of all of our wines across the board, basically 10 or 12 bucks a bottle. And then I could offer you, you know, shipping included on all orders, right? But you probably realized by now, hey, I'm still getting charged more money. And that's just it. Is that the business, even if they're discounting it heavily, they're still making the money that they want to be making. This goes back to, I've used JCPenney as an example of like a discount store that, you know, just has red line after red line of like, you saw this shirt at 90 bucks, we are discounting it to 40. But we're going to give you another half off that, so you can get this $90 shirt for $20. They're getting exactly what they want in terms of margin from that shirt. What they're relying on is they're going to sell a boatload of those shirts. And even though the margin might be really, really slim, they're selling enough volume to make the money that they want to make. So that's how that works. So when you see maybe, and I can't necessarily speak for, you know, any other business, but this is typically how it's organized. If you take like a flash sale site, for example, and they say, hey, we got this great wine that's normally 60 bucks. We are going to take a third off that price and charge you 40. But you know what? We're going to give you an extra special deal and we'll charge you 30 bucks a bottle. And on top of that, when you buy a case of it, we're going to, you know, ship it to you for 10 bucks, right? So let's do the quick math on that, right? So let's assume that I'm going to do this. If you're watching, you're going to see the calculator pop up here in a minute, along with like all my other files and notes and stuff. I'm going to move those out of the way. All right, here's the calculator on the side of the screen. Boop, boop, boop. So you're saying, okay, they're going to sell it for $30 times 12, right? So you're looking at a $360 case of wine, right? Now, I guarantee you that that flash sale site did not pay $30 a bottle for that wine, like we were talking about. Very typically, what you're going to see happen is the winery is going to have to discount that wine significantly from the retail price. Now, if the retail price is $60, but this place is selling it for $30, that means the winery had to sell it to that flash sale place for less than $30 a bottle, right? So let's just say, in like, you know, for the sake of like an example, right, that they bought this wine from the winery for $20 a bottle, right? So they're making, you know, back out, you know, the $20 per bottle in terms of like their cost. So you back out the $240, is that all of a sudden that case is $120 worth of revenue. But they're also giving you that free ship. They're giving you that $10 shipping deal, right? So they're going to get charged $80. Let's say, assume that they're going to get charged $90 to ship that case of wine across the country, right? All of a sudden you back out that $80 and they're making, you know, roughly $40 on that case, minus the cost of putting together that like email blast and, you know, overhead, things of that nature. You know, that might not sound like a lot. And I don't know what, you know, certain flash sale sites do in terms of like volume, but let's say you do 100 cases, right? You do 100 cases. So you multiply that by 100, all of a sudden you made $4,000, right? And I guarantee you that the goal for many of these companies, and this is kind of like an overgeneralization, but hopefully it kind of illustrates the point a little bit, in that all of a sudden you got to rely on volume, right? If you're only making, you know, $40 on a case of wine, you're going to have to sell a lot of cases of wine to make that business model make sense, because you're not going to pay the rent on $4,000, right? So you're going to need to do a lot to make it make sense. So, you know, you're still in profit there, though, as you can see. And that's how that works, right? Is that they might not make, you know, some of these places that do heavy discounting, whether it's a winery specifically, a flash sale site, or maybe it's your local country club that just gives you a great deal on good wine, you know, that's what they're doing. As they're saying, hey, we're not going to charge you a whole lot. In fact, we're going to give you a great deal. We're still going to make the money we need to make, and we're going to rely on the amount of volume that we do in order to make this happen. Now, to give you like a little bit more perspective, you know, we make like, on average, say 1,000 cases of wine a year. If we're going to ship all of those, you know, cases of wine across and all over the country, let's say the average cost of shipping a case is more like $75 between, you know, West Coast, you know, Midwest, Central, you know, East Coast, all that stuff. Let's say it's like on average, like $75. It's probably a little bit more than that, but let's go for it. So if you're doing 1,000 cases and we sell all of those, right, times 75, you're looking at a $75,000 shipping bill that we would have to eat, right? That eats way too much into, you know, a small business like ours or many others to just like cover the cost on all of it. So two things have to happen, like we were talking about. Number one, you either have to charge for that shipping, or you're going to have to factor it into the price of your wines from a budgetary standpoint, right? That's just the way it has to work, because that, I can tell you right now, we'd be out of business if we were doing that, period, full stop. Like, we would not be a thing if this was the case. If our wines were currently priced where they are right now, and we decided to start covering everybody's shipping costs, and this was the tab we had to pick up, we're out of business tomorrow, period. That's how it is. So you have to account for it in some way, shape, or form. And frankly, a lot of businesses, you know, this is obviously extreme. You're not necessarily going to always pick up the entire tab like that. But if that were the case, man, you're going to have to find a way to make that revenue up somewhere in terms of the volume of wine you're making, the amount you're charging for it, right? I think all that kind of makes sense. Hopefully I'm doing a halfway decent job of explaining this. Now, to kind of go back to like the tasting fee kind of thing, because we touched on that during this conversation in the cave as well, and the same thing is true. You know, there are certain wineries still today that will charge or not charge for a tasting. And their goal is that, one, hopefully you're going to buy wine while you're there or join the wine club, one of those couple of things. Two, that you're going to be a repeat customer, that you're going to come back to the winery or you're going to order online, whatever the case may be, right? They're going to get that second sale to you. Three is that you're going to be a referral source for them, right? That you're going to say, hey, we went to MTGA. They really took care of us. You need to go sit down with Mike or the HBIC and do a tasting with them. They're going to rely on kind of repeat business and you kind of sending consumers to them. And that's their hope with like a free tasting, right? The problem with hoping for revenue is that it's not guaranteed, is it? It turns out I can't buy barrels with hope. And kind of to, I think, our point when we were talking about this in the cave the other day is that, you know, it's silly for people to not be charging because I know how much my time is worth. I know how much wine I'm opening, the glassware we had to buy, the order forms that we have to print, the rent that we have to pay in order to be able to do this. So there are a lot of costs associated with this. And this is where I might have been a little bit blunt when y'all were out in the cave, so I apologize if that were the case. But this is the situation. I know full well that based on kind of the average number of people we host, the amount of bottles that we, you know, use for tastings, you know, the glassware, the order forms, like kind of the cost of, you know, what it is to have someone sit down and do a tasting with us. And that's roughly about $60. So when someone comes out to the winery and they sit down at the tasting table with us, let's say it's a group of four people, I'm out $240 the second they show up. That's just the reality of the situation, which is why our tasting fee is $75. You know, is making $15 per tasting gonna, you know, be a huge revenue generator for us? No, it's not. In fact, I can go back and see through, I think, 2024 and even back into 2023, I think maybe we charge 2 to 3 dozen tastings a year. And it's typically for folks that don't buy any wine because it's like, hey, I've got to pay the bills. I got to keep the lights on here. I got to charge you something. And I understand that you don't want to pay a tasting fee, but this is a business and we got to run it somehow. And I can't rely on hope to run my business. So I'm a little cold-blooded when it comes to that kind of thing. There are plenty of people that disagree with me on that. But, you know, when we, you know, we're talking about like Lawrence Wine Estate and, you know, this $125 fee, I think it was Heights, you know, based on the article that we covered in the episode a couple weeks ago. You know, that's not covering any costs. That's not covering the cost of that experience. That's a problem. That shouldn't be the case because two things are going to happen. One, you're either going to need to see a boatload of people and they're going to need to buy a boatload of wine to make up that, right? You know, and based on what I know of kind of how they want it to be this luxury experience, they're probably not going to be seeing like hundreds of thousands of people like the castle's been doing outside of their permit. Fine, no problem, right? So that's not necessarily the case, right? So, you know, I don't know what that cost is for them. I'm sure they have an idea of what that experience actually costs, and maybe they don't want to charge that much, right? But this is also where I think wineries have kind of, man, overshot the runway quite a bit, is when it comes to not just the tasting fees and the expense of the fee itself, but what it's costing them to do some of these experiences, right? Now, I'm all for a great hospitality experience. I think many of us are. We love to sit down, go through the wines, learn something, get to know the people, you know, have a little, a food pairing or something with it if it's possible. Like, it's really nice, right? But that comes at a cost. And I think there was a trend over the last 10 years in particular, as wineries kind of caught on to this, of like, hey, when people sit down for a one-on-one personal tasting and they have this great experience, consumers typically buy more. There's plenty of data to show that. Things that maybe you as a consumer don't know is that we study that kind of stuff and we see kind of what is, you know, the most advantageous way for us to sell you wine. And standing at a tasting bar amongst 30 other people is not as good as sitting down with you and having a more personal, dialed-in experience. But I am very truly of the opinion that there are certain wineries that maybe some of them we've mentioned, you know, that have focused so much on this experience that now the cost of providing that experience is just way too much. and they're having to charge you, the consumer, a boatload for it. Because let's face it, $125 a person to sit down and taste wine is not cheap, right? If you're out, you know, if there's, again, going back to like four of you, if you sit down and you're out $500 just to sit there and taste, you know, what's the likelihood that you're going to buy, you know, a whole bunch of wine on top of that? Now, they might have, you know, a sales tactic like, hey, if you buy X amount or, you know, whatever, we'll, you know, comp the tastings, you know, there's no tasting fee. You know, that's what we do. That's why we only charge a couple of dozen tastings a year, is because more often than not, people are buying wine. And we say, hey, I'm not going to charge you for this couple. You know, you bought a case of wine. I'm not going to charge you $150 necessarily just to sit here with me. Like, you're already buying wine. We're good. But I have taken that into account in our budget, right? That, hey, if I'm going to comp X amount of tastings a year, the price of my wine kind of needs to reflect that. And there's a certain volume that I need to sell to make sure that I can actually comp those tastings, because I'm out that as a cost covering source, right? I'm no longer making that $75 on a tasting fee. That money's got to come from somewhere else now to help keep the lights on, right? So from our perspective as a winery, we are now factoring that into our budget and saying, hey, as long as we continue selling enough wine, we can still continue to offer, you know, complimentary tastings at certain levels of purchasing, right? That's how that works. Now, you know, when it comes to like all of this stuff, like, so, you know, I guess like, how do we wrap this up, right? Is that there's a lot of moving parts to this. And frankly, it feels as though, and maybe I've just heard too many of like the horror stories. But it seems to me that there are many wineries that are like just blissfully like ignorant of these costs and just kind of continue banging their head against a wall saying, let's just keep discounting for the sake of discounting because it sells wine. But now they're not taking into account the cost of shipping that case, or, you know, the lower margins that they're experiencing by offering those discounts. And they kind of spin their wheels in the mud and never go anywhere, right? Because you could do this as well. You know, like if you happen to see, you know, costs start to rise, right? You know, how do you account for that? Do you need to take more price increases? Can you continue offering that great shipping deal when, you know, shipping a case of wine not that long ago across the country was like $60. It's now up, you know, 30 something percent over the last, you know, few years. You know, can you still bear that? Or do you need to pass that cost on to the consumer in some way, shape, or form? You know, these are the conversations that, I mean, hopefully, I think I probably don't give some wineries, you know, enough credit. It does feel as though I hear more kind of just like, oh yeah, we don't, you know, we just hope we sell enough wine. I'm like, that's hope. Hope doesn't work. Hope, it's not a thing. You can't run your business on hope. You have to be pragmatic about it every once in a while. And you need to look at your budget and your line items in that budget and say, what is working, what is not working? Because this is what we had to do in the early days when we were distributing some of our wine. You know, I was selling it at below cost. I didn't even do the math. I didn't know what my cost of goods are. I didn't understand what it cost me to make a bottle of wine. And for like the first 3 years, I think it was, 4 years maybe, you know, as we started selling wine. So when we started selling wine in 2012 and through about like 2015, 16, I was losing money hand over fist because I didn't understand what my margins were, because I didn't really do a good job of keeping track of how much it cost me to make a bottle of wine. So if we discounted it, if we sold it to a distributor, if we did some of these things, we were losing money, which is why we operated in the red for a very long time. Starting this wine business was a lot like owning a boat. You're just throwing money at it all the time. That's literally what it was like. And then I started putting spreadsheets together and I started really trying to understand what it cost, not just to make that bottle of wine, what my time is worth, you know, what our barrel, how a barrel is going to influence that cost, how, you know, buying, you know, paper to print tasting forms on, how that's going to impact things. If we're going to have a work truck, what does that do? You know, we started putting together a really, I think, solid budget. And as a result, I'm like hyper, you know, aware of all that stuff. And I don't know. I feel as though there are plenty of wineries that kind of go through that budgeting process, but it's like just a little too malleable. And they say, well, you know, that's fine. We'll just make it up here. or, you know, oh, that's okay. You know, we'll consider that a rounding error. Or, you know what, we you know, yeah, we had to discount a bunch, but we sold a bunch of wine and we're under budget, but whatever, it's okay. I don't know. It feels as though it's a tad like too lackadaisical sometimes. And I hear more about that from wineries than I do like the great successes of like, man, our budget was like on point. I mean, it's never on point. I mean, anyone who's put together a solid budget, like if you're within a degree of separation, you're like, good enough for government work. Like it's, you know, it's a moving target. You never know what's going to come your way. Things change all the time throughout the year. You're doing the best you can with what you got. I am ultra conservative when it comes to my budgeting. I would rather, you know, under promise and over deliver when it comes to, you know, our business and how we operate kind of through the accounting and back end side of things. That way, when wine gets to your door, you get to hopefully experience it in like the best way possible. Like that's our goal. You know, what I don't want to do, and this is where I think, again, a lot of business get in trouble, is kind of shoot for the moon on a regular basis and then use some of these marketing and sales tactics in terms of discounts, free shipping, and all this other stuff, and not have that taken into account. Or their goals are just out of whack to begin with because they're like, we want to see double-digit growth for multiple years over and over and over again. And you're sitting there as a salesperson like, we don't even have the inventory to do that. Like, you know, our burn rate's not there. Even if we made enough wine to achieve that said goal, we're not selling it fast enough. We don't have a large enough customer base. Our wine club's not big enough. All these other things. Like there's no way around over through this wall. Like we're going to have to be more reasonable here. And there are a ton of wine businesses that just aren't, or are just, I don't know, decide to be blissfully ignorant of some of this stuff. And it blows my mind. So this is always a moving target. I do think that, you know, whether it's a discount site, whether it's a wine shop, a restaurant, the winery itself, or the wine club you're a part of, the great thing about this industry is that it is a hospitality-driven industry. And our goal is always to make sure that you, the consumer, have the best experience you possibly can. That we have a good, you know, business-to-client relationship that hopefully becomes more than that. That it's all of a sudden you're acquaintances, and then, you know, through wine releases and events and things, that we get to know each other better. And that's how, you know, small businesses like ours become really successful, is that you really get to know your people and you cater to them in ways that they like. You're not just a shameless, you know, car salesman. No offense to car salesmen, but let's face it, right? It's a stereotype and it's true. So that's the goal. You know, despite all of this stuff, and I would say this, that, and this is good advice for the wineries, number one, dial into these things and understand how they're actually affecting your business. And two, for you folks out there that are wine consumers and, you know, maybe get a little pissed off every once in a while because someone charged you a tasting fee or charged you for shipping, try to remember some of this stuff. Also, don't call the customer service line or email us and berate us. This is like always one of my pet peeves, like people that are rude to like hospitality staff. Like if you're rude to a server in a restaurant, you're dead to me. Period. Full stop. That's just how it is. You know, the person, you know, if it's someone like me, you know, feel free to be a little frustrated. Like, Mike, what the hell? Like, I bought a bunch of wine. Why am I being charged a tasting fee? And I'll try to explain it to you. And if I'm wrong, we will make it right. I actually told one of those stories in the cellar the other day where there was a situation where I was entering an order. Someone had bought a good chunk of wine and I put the tasting in there because they had, you know, been there with a couple of them. And I entered the order. I send off the receipt. You know, they saw, hey, we bought this wine, but we also got charged the tastings. Like they sent a pretty rude email. They're like, how dare you, you know, this is unacceptable. Like we bought wine. Is that not good enough for you? Like it was a mess, just an absolute mess. One of the worst people I've had to deal with. Which didn't make me want to waive the tasting fees, but it's like, okay, well, let me explain to you kind of my perspective. And very typically for folks, you know, we waive tastings automatically for wine club members. That's always our thing. It's like, hey, if you're supporting us and buying, you know, our wine club is a case of wine a year. That's about $1,000. Like, yeah, I'll take care of them for you. If you're buying, you know, two bottles of rosé, that's a little tough for me to, you know, waive that tasting fee, right? So there is, you know, a discussion that needs to be had. We made it right. Everything was fine. It was a tough one, but we do the best we can to be hospitable and take care of you guys and make sure that whether you're that flash sale site or that restaurant or that person in our wine club, that we provide you with the thing that you want and it's of good value at a price that, you know, is reasonable and that you're getting the bang for your buck that you want. That's our goal, period, right? There's always a little bit of room for some of these discussions about why don't you offer a discount? Why don't you comp my shipping? You know, why are you charging so much for tasting fees? That's always a discussion that's worth having. And it's always worth, you know, if you're a little miffed about something or just surprised, then let's have a conversation about it. This is where the wineries are coming from. Hopefully, for those people that are in the industry, this is helpful in some way for your performance. Like, if you don't know some of this stuff and how it's impacting your business, like, you better figure it out. You better figure it out in a hurry. But also from the consumer side, that, you know, that this kind of sheds some light on what we deal with and kind of how we try to make sure that we do the best we can with what we got, given that there's a lot of external pressure on the financial side to make the numbers make sense. And that sometimes offering, you know, great deals or free shipping is just not possible because it's not factored into the price of the wine that we're making. And we have to kind of stick to our guns with that. Otherwise, we can raise our prices and you have to pay more no matter what, but there's no line item for shipping. You can do the Amazon Prime thing because you're paying for shipping. It's just factored into all the prices of all their goods so that the shipping line, it says zero every time. That's how that works. Big surprise. That's how that works, right? All right, hopefully this was helpful. We went a little longer today. This is, I understand why this is such a point of contention. I understand why people don't like paying for shipping. I understand why people don't like paying for tastings. I understand why people like discounts. I love a good discount. I went to the Nike outlet the other day. I needed some new gym shorts and they had, you know, a great like weekend sale of like, hey, normally stuff is 20% off, but we're going to give you another 40% off that, you know, kind of that JCPenney, you know, style marketing I was mentioning. And I'm like, this is great. I can go get, you know, a couple pairs of gym shorts, kind of like two for the price of one or less or whatever it was. And it felt good. It felt great to get a deal. It always does. But there are certain things when it comes to, you know, high quality stuff, kind of luxury goods, so to speak, consumer goods, that might not be the case, you know. And if there are great brands that you can find at a great value through maybe some of these flash sale sites or just places that offer regular deals, please have at it. Please have at it. But understand that just because one business does it doesn't mean that another one can, right? Because it's all based on what that budget is, what their pricing model is, and what that eventually really kind of that business model is for them and how it works. All right, I'm done rambling. I keep kind of like diving back into it. Hopefully this was helpful. Love you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the show. Follow us on our social networks at MTGA Wines, YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, social network formerly known as Twitter. You know the drill. Head to our website, mtgawines.com or even blairpaytonwines.com to check out what we're up to on the wine side of things. Learn a little bit more about us and our wine programs. Please be 21 years of age or older to do that. That would be lovely of you. And we'll see you next week. It's been a little wonky over the last couple weeks between recording kind of late, getting things posted. We're trying to get back on track now that the springtime is slowing down. I'm officially in like yard work and project mode around the house. So hopefully after this week, it'll be a little bit more regular and we'll be able to keep you up to date. Very excited. We got some great topics coming up over the next month or so. We're back into a blending. We got a blending episode coming up again that we're going to be recording. I'm trying to remember what we blended last year. I want to say it was our cab or our red blend. And we're going to see if we can't pick something else and play with it a little bit in the cellar. We'll see. All right. Love you guys. Mean it. Have a great rest of your day, week, month, whatever the case may be. And we'll see you next time here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.